All right, welcome to another Sunday Conversation presented by FingerLakesOne.com. I'm Josh Durso, and my guest this hour is Seneca County Sheriff Tim Luce. Sheriff, welcome back.
Thank you.
So, obviously, you're seeking re-election this year. Talk to us a little bit about what that inspiration was, why you thought another term was a good idea, and where you stand right now.
Well, when I first ran, it was something I always wanted to do. I was lucky and got elected, and the 4 years went pretty good. We didn't have a lot of sticking points, but I'm pretty lucky. I have a lot of great people that work at the sheriff's office, so it went pretty smoothly, I thought, and I'm hoping for another 4 years of smooth sailing again, I'm hoping.
How fast did those 4 years, because it seems like the last 4 years have absolutely flown by. I would imagine you being in the cockpit, it probably feels like it has moved pretty quick.
Yeah, it's unbelievable that I even had to run again right now. It's we hit the ground running as soon as we got elected. Myself and John Clear, we had accreditation right off the bat. I mean, it was like the first couple of weeks we were in office, trying to get used to even running the office. We had two different divisions that were reaccredited. And then shortly thereafter, it seemed like we had the drowning in Seneca Lake, and it just seemed to compound and go. But it worked well. It was quick. It was, you know, a lot of work, but we did it, and it was enjoyable.
What were some of the if you were sort of looking back at the first 4 years, what are a couple of things that really sort of stood out to you as either memorable in a good way or in a bad way, but just that sort of helped you guys sort of learn about how you function, where the leadership style sort of fits and where it doesn't, and how to tweak things?
Yeah, I don't know how to pinpoint exactly how it went. I mean, I'm lucky in that I have an undersheriff that we think a lot alike. We believe in a lot of the same ideals. The probably the most memorable thing that we did was because we're really in tune with and trying to help victims, we started a family services unit, which was in the criminal investigations division. We have two individuals that were reapportioned to doing domestics and child sexual cases. We gave them a lot of special training. And then later on, we ended up partnering with the Child Advocacy Center. Once I saw one of the centers, because I really didn't even know what it was, we saw a grand opening in Geneva, like the first couple months I was in office. And I said we needed one of those in Seneca County, and we partnered with them and helped them transition one in right in Waterloo. So it was a big year.
So obviously, probably some things have changed over the course of 4 years. That's pretty normal, I'd say. That said, looking ahead, what's different this time around than maybe wasn't the last couple years?
Well, I think we've been in the last year and a half, 2 years, we've really been dealing with the opioid addiction problem. We try to work with that on a two-pronged thing. My criminal investigations division, we have a narco division, which deals with the drug problems in the county, and we added another officer into that division, and we're really going after the heroin and fentanyl and addiction problems there. But with the second prong, we've added a mental health clinician in the jail and a substance abuse counselor in the jail. And we're actually working on a process right now, because I think it's going to be mandated anyway, for a medically assisted treatment in the jail to help these people that are want to quit using drugs, basically. Hopefully that'll help.
How, for those who might not sort of see the context or see the stories every day, the opioid epidemic, how much of a challenge and a burden is that on your office in terms of just how much time you guys have to focus on it every single day?
Yeah, that's probably a big portion of what we do every day. I mean, especially in the correctional facility. I mean, almost everybody that comes into the facility is somehow addicted to some kind of chemical, it seems like.
And the one question that we always get is, what's the monetary impact on how you guys have to sort of run through your budget? Is that something that you have to plan for ahead of time, or is that something that you just kind of have to take day by day because you aren't always sure what you're going to see at the jail?
Well, the the biggest thing with the jail, and a lot of people don't understand, the medical bills, most of the people that come in are on Medicaid at some point or another, which is probably a lot of people don't understand that the state pays part of the Medicaid and the county pays part of Medicaid when people are outside jail. As soon as somebody comes into the facility, Medicaid ends. The county residents pay the full medical bills of everything. So there's really no way we can take an average, but we can't really predict what's going to happen through the year.
So as you, before we start getting into some of the issues and some of the things that you guys did accomplish over the last 3-4 years, I do want to ask, what are you hearing from folks as you go door to door, talk to people, talk to voters, talk to just people who live in Seneca County? What are some of the different things that you're hearing that they want to see out of law enforcement in Seneca County, excuse me, over the next 2, 3, 4 years?
They haven't really got into that. I mean, I went out, and this was a early petition year, so it was kind of weird. Yeah. People didn't really want to talk a lot, or a real lot, because it was cold and and the weather wasn't real good. So it was tough getting petitions this year, for one thing. People didn't want to talk a lot. I got a lot of, you're doing a great job here, I'm signing your petition. Yeah. But I didn't really hear a lot of what people want us to go, what direction they want us to go in.
So obviously one of the areas where a lot of law enforcement agencies are seeing a ton of success, SRO programs, resource officer. Seneca County obviously doing its part in that process. What's that experience been like? And then also, where do you think that type of programming can actually grow in the coming years?
Well, I think it's a great program. I was one of the first ones. I really pushed for the SRO program when I worked for the Waterloo Police Department. Mm-hmm. Was one of the plans to do partner with the school district, and Waterloo, they did partner with Waterloo, and Seneca Falls did the same thing. Seneca Falls has a SRO in Seneca Falls with the town police, and Waterloo has one with Waterloo PD in Waterloo. I really wanted one in every school in our county. I did push and get an SRO in Romulus. I think it's been a real positive impact on the school. I think it's helped in many ways with the liaison between law enforcement and the school district. I don't think it's, a lot of people think it's a police with a badge, but it's more than that.
It's the relationship building, right?
That's right. It really is.
And how important, I always like to ask law enforcement this, because it's interesting. Building that relationship at age 5, 6, 7, 8 makes the job a lot easier 10, 15 years later.
Yeah, I mean, I know when I went out getting petitions, I knocked on this one door, and a young man came to the door, and he goes, "Oh, I remember you, Mr. Luce. You arrested me one time," and it was a positive thing, because I treated him decent, and he remembered that, and I think that's part of it, too. When I was at Waterloo Police Department, I always believed in the youth. I coached. I did a lot of things like that. Myself and Les Marquardt, I worked with Les a lot. We did what they called a lunch with a cop. I'd love to start the program again. I'm trying to look at it now, where we would go into different schools and just have lunch with the kids, and they loved it.
Yeah. Now, obviously, you're talking about, parts of what you're talking about are embedded in this community policing mindset. What are some of the things that you guys have sort of identified and tackled over the last 2, 3, 4 years? That have filled into that community policing mentality to build a little more community around law enforcement?
Well, our office itself, I mean, I've pushed the guys to try to get out of their cars and walk downtown even during the daytime and just stop in and see how the business owners are doing and stuff like that. I believe that's a big thing that we should do. We really work for them. We always did it in Waterloo. We checked the doors at night. We did things like that, and business owners like to be caught. I mean, you think you're bothering them, but you're not. They're like, geez, the guy checked my business and he found my door open. But I like to do those things. I think direct contact with the community is huge. For we're not just out there, you know, making arrests and things like that. We are supposed to service the community and help them. And if they have problems, it's the same as I always tell young guys. I go, somebody calls and you think it's a baloney call, but that's the most important thing on their mind at the time, or they wouldn't have called. It takes a lot to pick up the phone and call the police because you can't figure something out or you want help.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, Facebook sort of been a game changer for how police do business all over. Not the only area that you guys have focused on. Obviously, you launched an app this past year. Those two things, talk to me about how those two items have sort of helped you guys be able to not only build that community, but also do your job a little more effectively on that day-to-day.
Well, Facebook, I don't like Facebook. I really don't, because I think it's, I put things out in Facebook because it's almost a mandatory thing today. Mm-hmm. I don't like it because people send messages that they wouldn't normally tell me to my face. Mm-hmm. But the app is huge, I think. We did a brand new web page with Finger Lakes One, of course, which looks beautiful, and it's interactive. People really have a thing. And the app is more like that, except for it's a little bit more, only in the fact that I wished I would have had it when we had the flood, because I could send, if everybody had the app, I could send out notices, warnings, and things like that, and they get it immediately, because everybody has their phone. I mean, even in the flood, if you have no electric, you have nothing, most of the time you could still get a message through a phone.
Mm-hmm. Since you brought it up, let's talk about that a little bit, the flood experience down in Lodi, obviously Sheldrake Point, Lodi Point, Lodi Ovid, hit pretty hard. What was that experience like, not just obviously within the days that it actually happened, but the weeks around it that probably took up a lot of your time?
Well, a lot of people don't know this, but I wasn't even in the state at the time the flood hit. I had to come home. I was on vacation, which I take a couple weeks every year. But it was a tough situation, because I really don't think it opened the eyes to a lot of people in this county, because I don't think we were really ready for this, to be honest with you. And I'm taking a FEMA course today, actually, for the last 2 days, and today I got to finish up as soon as we're done here today. But it was huge. It extended us. It stretched us to our limits. And I think the guys really stood up and did a good job. But were we ready for this? No, we were not.
I have to imagine that in your line of work, that it just, it's one of the things that you're sort of thinking about all the time, a natural disaster, but it isn't anything that all the classes in the world probably can't completely prepare you for that moment. Is that comparable to sort of some of the other hairy situations that law enforcement could get themselves into, just given how much uncertainty is unraveling in that type of scenario where you have a massive amount of water flowing into Seneca Lake?
Yeah, I think we were very lucky that we had no injuries, no deaths, no nothing. We had great property loss, and I think those people are going to be working on that for years to come yet. I mean, I don't. Some of them will never get back to the way they were. And I feel terrible for the people down in Culver and in Lodi. But that being said, when a lot of times we get thrown into situations and your training kicks in, and I think we did a fairly good job. But like I said, I don't think anybody in the county was really ready for anything like this to happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned some of the training and accreditation that you guys have gone through over the years. A lot of people probably listening might think of that as just sort of formality, not really all that important. Talk to us a little bit about how important those training and those sort of environments lend itself to you guys being able to do your job better all the time and serve the community better.
Training is huge, because I think it's the same as anything. You do your training, it's the same as playing golf. You train and you train and you train, you get better at it, and you fall back on your training. I think we did a lot with we sent the criminal investigation division. Everybody's trained in homicide investigation. They're all investigators. They're all tech certified. So, and like in the human or family services unit, they're all forensic interviewers, so they can help out with interviewing children, things like that. So it's huge, because it helps you all along down the road for your training.
And I have to imagine in a smaller department like in Seneca, you may have to wear one hat one day and another hat another day. Is those training opportunities to train as many people as you possibly can sort of help in those odd scenarios where you need people to sort of fill and work in multiple roles at different times?
Yeah, it's really, we've really pulled a lot of our, trained a lot of the correction officers and things like that. We've used correction officers as traffic control for Sunk Falls when they've had different events. We used them down when we had the flood, like I said. So we've really tried to dip into our wealth of talent that's in the sheriff's office. We have a lot of talented people in the correctional facility that hold a lot of titles also, especially with our drones. I mean, our one pilot there is top notch. Mm-hmm. So
now, to that end, obviously managing the jail is the other aspect of the job that doesn't get a lot of glamour, doesn't get the attention that the arrests and sort of the law enforcing side of it does. Where does that stand compared to 4 years ago, and what are you most proud of out of the jail facility?
Well, I've tried to bring it closer. It's always been, seemed to be a divide between the road patrol and the correctional facility. I've tried to pull that together. I don't think I'll ever get it completely pulled together. I've talked to other sheriffs. It's the same everywhere. Those people are very, very well trained. They're very smart people. They're good people. They do a very hard job over there in the correctional facility. But yet I'm really proud of them and the fact that they've kind of stepped up to the community policing part of it, and that we just went up to Buffalo and we played a flag football game up there at the Buffalo Stadium. It was awesome. It was all correction officers and one road patrol guy, and they got along great.
That's awesome.
And they won a couple games, and they raised the second most of all the people, all the teams up there for Special Olympics. And I mean, it was huge for them, and I'm real proud of them.
That's awesome. Now, obviously, one of the things that you brought in on this list that I thought was pretty interesting, new radio system. Might come as a surprise to some people that in 2019 we're talking about the need for new radio systems, that isn't already at the top of its game, since we have smartphones and everything else that talk to each other all the time. What are some of the challenges that you guys have seen over the years in that area that made you guys pursue a new option?
Well, I think it all started with 9/11, actually, when everybody was showing up and nobody could talk to each other, interoperability. So the state threw out a bunch of grants and they said you need to get a better radio system. I'm not saying, I don't think we went in exactly the right direction, but because we're probably, everybody went out and bought radios, Ontario, Wayne, everybody around bought new radio systems. They all went to different frequencies, and we're really, it's much better, mm-hmm. but it's farther apart at the same time because everybody isn't up to snuff at this point. And actually, we can talk to less people today than we could 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But the radio system itself is much better because we get better coverage. And the only thing I don't like is all of our first three channels that we have are encrypted, so that the public can't hear it. And I think sometimes that's a downfall, but that's what we have and that's what we'll live with, I guess.
Now, obviously, part of that, what you sort of referenced, is being able to communicate cross-county bounds. Mm-hmm. Is that the part that gets a little bit challenging when different things are happening near a county line?
Yeah, because we have to make sure that everybody, that's another training thing that 911 has to do with the radios, because we have to throw up what they call, I forget what exactly what they call them, but they throw up a patch so that we can talk to each other, okay. Basically. So it's something that they have to do and they have to train at, so it's done quickly and effortlessly.
So I want to get your take on a few state items that we've seen come through the hopper over the last couple months or so, and then some different trends too. One of those being the shortage of law enforcement. Across the board, it seems like recruits and recruiting is down. When you hear that, one, does it concern you as the sheriff of Seneca County? But then also, what are some of the things that you think could possibly be done to sort of bolster those numbers? Is it getting in schools? Is it sort of changing the perception of law enforcement as a career or something else?
Yeah, I think we have to promote better. Actually, we sat down in a command staff meeting the other day, and we talked about we're going to run, like we started the Citizens Academy, we're going to start, what we want to do is a publicized recruitment academy, where we tell people, have people come in and tell them exactly what, how to go about it, what they need to do, and how to get involved in law enforcement, either correctional or law enforcement side. So that's what we're going to try and do. I think it's, a lot of it's recruitment. The other thing is publicity. I mean, all the bad publicity police officers have taken, a lot of people don't want to become police officers. I just think it's a bad myth, and I think we're very lucky in our area, and the fact that in our area we have, even the surrounding counties, we have some really good law enforcement people. I mean, I think we do a pretty good job around here. We don't have half the problems that Chicago or some of these other big cities have. We're pretty lucky.
And that's got to be tough, because you're battling the national headlines and sort of these national trends or things that people think are trends, when you're really operating in a completely different world down here.
Right.
So no cash bail, it seems, is going to be what ends up happening for certain misdemeanor offenses, nonviolent. Your take on that and how that sort of changes the way you guys operate, if it does at all?
Well, I don't think it's going to, well, it's going to affect us. I don't think it's going to kill us, but I do think that the new law has taken a lot of authority away from the judges themselves. I think the judges in our area are smart enough to know when somebody is a flight risk, or somebody is a dangerous person, or something like that. And I know there's a few provisions in there for them to be able to do that, but I think there's a few laws that I think a Class B misdemeanor sale of drugs is automatic. Cashless bail. I mean, I think that's ridiculous, but especially since the fact that you're not looking at, if they're selling drugs like that, they're also possibly linked to other crimes, or with the drugs like heroin, they've probably overdosed people by selling that stuff.
And that seems to be the interesting part, is that it kind of takes the context out of the situation, or pulls the context out of the work, the police work that you guys probably have been doing behind the scenes. Is that something that you guys might have to sort of account for moving forward, maybe documenting things more effectively or building broader cases, or is that going to be?
I think you're going to really have to look at the totality. You can't just make an arrest and put them, you know, up for an arraignment. You're going to have to really look at whether they're a flight risk, whether they're a danger to somebody else, or something like that. I think you're really going to have to document and show the judge that, so that he can make a good, sound decision if you really don't think he should be out on the streets.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've also seen that mugshots will be restricted to some extent. It's not totally clear how far they will be restricted, but it does appear as though they'll be restricted. Your take on that and how that changes the way you guys sort of publicize the work you're doing every day.
Yeah, I haven't really read the law completely. I would rather be transparent, the same as we have been for the last 4 years. I mean, if we make an arrest, we throw it out to the press, and we try to make sure that it's diligent and it's comprehensive and it's correct. I think that that's the right of the people to be able to see those things. I know they say you're innocent until proven guilty, but it's not saying you're guilty. It's just saying that you were arrested for those things.
And of course, last but not least, marijuana legalization. Doesn't seem like it's going to happen in the immediate future, but it does seem like it's something that the state is intent on looking at moving forward. Most law enforcement have come out against this. I'm assuming you have as well. Thoughts?
Well, I'm not against it. I'm against the process that they're throwing out there right at the moment. I think that they should really sit down and look at the Colorado report. I mean, there's other states that have already done this and been through the problems. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should ever reinvent the wheel. You should look at what's happened and possibly look at things to combat the problems that they've had. I mean, their mortality rate on the highway has skyrocketed since they did it. Crime rate has gone up. The money that the state and Colorado thought they were going to make, they paid in twofold out in services such as addiction problems and things like that, counseling and mental health problems. So I just think you really need to look at the whole process. I think we don't look at those processes long enough and think up of a real good solution before you enact some of these laws.
So what's next for you over the next several months as you move through the campaign process and continue, obviously, serving as sheriff? What are some of the things coming up for you that you're sort of keeping your eye on?
Well, I mean, we're still looking at all the, waiting for the budget to come out and see what laws are really going to come in place that are going to affect us. And I think it's going to be kind of a shock and awe for law enforcement because a lot of law enforcement topics are coming up. So I think it's going to change drastically the way we do business. We did certain things like the cap court, which was a big change. We were one of the first in the 7th Judicial District to establish one in our county. So I think a lot of changes are coming forth. I'm hoping we can keep up on them and make sure that we keep the county in a good, safe place.
Has the centralized arraignment helped on the organizational side for you guys to sort of streamline the process, the daily process, or has it made things a little more complicated?
It's actually made it a lot easier, I think. I think it's a fairer system. I agreed with it right along. Okay. I'm glad that the 7th Judicial District let us do it the way we wanted to do it. I mean, by having it right in the public lobby at the Correctional Facility Law Enforcement Center in Romulus. That way I wasn't transporting these people all over to different courts or different areas. It saved us a lot of money. And we've been kind of modeled by other counties after we've put ours in place. So, yeah, and I really think with the defense attorney, it's a fairer system. Mm-hmm. With the defense attorney being there, actually my jail population has gone down since the cap court has been put in place. Mm-hmm. So I've went from 97 inmates basically to down to 60.
Oh, wow.
So it was a big drop.
All right, well, appreciate the time. Best of luck moving forward, and thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Josh.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to today's show. New episodes every Sunday right here on FingerLakes1.com. And, of course, the podcast is available wherever you consume your podcasts and on a lot of streaming services. So check that out today and look for a new episode next week right here on FingerLakes1.com.